Wow, got many kids here. So, if you go south all the way to Mexico, you will get to, if you keep going south, you will get to Guatemala. But if you keep going south, there is Honduras. And in Honduras, there's the story is about this boy from a very, very small village in Honduras. Very, very small village, no electricity. That means no video games, no computers, nothing. So at this village, there are no cars. And the only car that there was the teacher's car. The teacher was not from that village, but he would go there from Monday to Thursday, and then on Friday afternoon, he would go back to his house. So he wasn't from there, but he would teach there. Anyways, this kid grew up there, and he liked going to church. The church had an electric guitar. Now, I told you there was no electricity. So how can it be an electric guitar? Yes, I will answer the question later. Yes, there was an electric guitar, and there was no electricity. So the guitar was ran by a battery. But the battery had to be charged. Someone had to go 4 hours on a horse to charge the battery, and then 4 hours back. And then 2 days later, the battery would be charged again, so someone had to go pick it up, so there would be an electric guitar at church. But this boy got a little bit older, so he was old enough to go get the battery so the guy at church can play the guitar. But anyways, this boy wanted to learn how to play the guitar, so what he would do was he would go on Sunday mornings, and every day really, he would look at the guitarist's fingers, and he was able to learn from there. He would just look at his fingers, and then he would imagine he's playing a guitar, even though he didn't have a guitar, but he ended up learning how to play the guitar. But anyways, he got to be 17 years old, and there were no jobs for a 17-year-old boy, so he decided to go away. And where could he go? Where could he go? So he decided to go to the United States. So one morning before sunrise, he woke up at 2 in the morning, and he took a bus to the main city of Honduras, and then a bus to Guatemala, and then a bus to the border of Guatemala and Mexico. But then he found a train, a huge, huge freight train. Then he saw all these people getting on top of the train, the size of the train, and then he decided to get on the train, 2,000 more miles to get to the United States. So eventually, 3 weeks later, he made it to the border of the United States. But then he got arrested. He got arrested. He was detained. He was in trouble now. At that prison, he has no liberty. He couldn't go anywhere without, a police guy or somebody to take care of him. So anyways, but at this prison, there was some ministers that went there and do services, and they brought a guitar. So this little boy saw the guitar, and he was like, oh, it's cool, cool. But this minister gave him the guitar. So he was really happy when he got the guitar because he already knew how to play the guitar. So, but this guy, this 17-year-old boy, he decided to ask the minister to help him to get out of there, to get out of the prison. But the ministers had no idea how to help him. They were like, what can we do to help this guy? Anyways, they went home, and they were thinking about helping this guy from Honduras. And eventually, they decided to find ways to see if they could help him. And there was a process that they had to go through. It was called sponsorship. And they eventually found information, and they decided to sponsor this boy. And 3 months later, he got out with his ministers. He got out with them and went to live with them. And I tell you, I was surprised They were Unitarians. They were Unitarians, and that boy is me. So I'm really happy to be here today, and thank you.
What are you thinking? Take a moment, if you would, to make a note. I guess now you're wondering what that guy at the lectern is going on about. But before that, what were you thinking? The mind loves to go to two different places, doesn't it? It loves to go to the future. What have I got to do tomorrow? What have I got to get ready for next week? What's on my to-do list? As soon as I leave here, I have to do this and this and this and then. And it loves to go to the past, to remember that time years ago, to remember that thing that she said to me yesterday. What did she mean by that? We love to dwell in the past, and we love to dwell in the future. Our life, however, is in neither of those two places. It is here. It is in this moment. And so we come to these times to practice the experience of right now, the breath that comes in and goes out right now and right here. So let's take a moment now to share together the silence that is beyond and beneath and below all of the chatter of our thoughts. In the silence, we encounter our true selves and the reality of our lives. Blessed be, and amen. My heart had a visitor. Knock, knock. Yes? Hi, I'm Anger. Oh yes, I recognize you by the tightness in my chest I'm feeling. You're here about that letter, aren't you? Well, come on in. This was about 6 or 7 weeks ago, and the letter was actually one that Yancey got. He's been with Laura Kim and me for over 7 years now. In fact, last September, we celebrated his swearing in as a U.S. citizen. And as soon as he was a citizen, he proceeded to get a U.S. passport, which he used over this last Christmas break to visit his family back in Honduras. Before he left, I went with him down to register to vote. The letter from the voter registrar came while Yancey was in Honduras. I assumed that it was his voter registration card, and I put it on his desk to be there when he returned, and then I forgot about it. After he got back, Yancey shared with me that the letter was not his voter registration card. It was a letter saying that his driver's license didn't go through, was not verified, would he please provide further documentation? I know that every time you impose one extra step in the process, then a certain percentage of people won't do that step. Imposing additional steps and requirements and inconveniences on target populations succeeds in reducing the voter representation of those populations. I know that, and that's when I felt Anger knocking. Well, come on in, Anger. What can I do for you? And Anger said, well, I appreciate the attention you are giving me. You used to push me away, and I would have to go around and slip in the back door. But since you are being so attentive, and that's all I really ever wanted, let me ask if I can help you. Well, I'm feeling the energy that I'm getting from you, I said. I offer you that energy at your disposal as my gift, said Anger graciously. So I started looking up what's going on in Florida. Certain of the powers that be in this state are prepared to use any means they can get away with to disenfranchise any population that's less likely to vote for them. For example, we know that Florida is one of 13 states in which convicted felons permanently and forever lose the right to vote. Most states allow felons to return to voting after they've completed their incarceration and all supervised release, and some states never suspend voting rights. People can vote from prison. For a second example, just a few years back, you might remember 2008, Florida had a big purge of voter registration rolls that removed 12,000 voters, mostly due to typos and other obvious clerical errors. And I'm in favor of cleaning up typos, but look it, something other than an OCD impulse for clerical accuracy is going on here. 70% of the flagged voters in Florida's purge were African American or Latino. And for a third example, it turns out that voter registration drives accounted for 15% of all Latino registration, 20% of all African American registrations, but only 6% of white registrations. So the state of Florida passed a law last spring to substantially restrict voter registration drives. I thought it was curious when we couldn't get Yancey registered at the local library or indeed anywhere, I discovered, other than one office downtown, which is not in a major government building, but tucked away in its own little storefront where it's just a little harder to find. But we did find it. A study released 2 months ago found a huge gap between the registration rates of native-born citizens and naturalized citizens. Complexity of registration is part of the problem, and the study noted there are also discriminatory policies that inhibit their ability to register to vote. These include ethnic minorities being blocked by election administrators in the voter registration process, laws requiring voters to prove their citizenship prior to registering to vote, and inaccurate database citizenship checks. So how are you feeling now, Anger? I asked. Going strong, said Anger. Yancey, however, was not much bothered. He has been through much, much worse bureaucratic runaround than one more visit to an office to clear up some paperwork. He is used to and patient about bureaucratic hurdles, and it reminds me that my own impatience when I hit much smaller snags is a luxury of my white privilege. I learned a lot about that. During the four years that Laura Kim and I lived in El Paso, Texas. 700,000 people, the Census Bureau reports, and three-fourths of them speak a language other than English at home. From the roof of our house, we could look out over Juarez, Mexico, a city of 1.4 million. During 2003, I was the ministerial intern at our church in Albuquerque. I was up in Albuquerque 5 days a week and back home in El Paso for 2 days. Every week, I would be on an early morning bus for the five-hour bus ride from El Paso to Albuquerque. And every week, the bus pulled into a Border Patrol checkpoint. Because, you see, there's actually not just one border, but a kind of buffer zone. So people that can get as far as, say, El Paso still have a number of hurdles before getting to any more interior part of the country. At the checkpoint, a Border Patrol agent would board the bus and go down the aisle checking papers. Sometimes some of the passengers were taken away. I never had to show any papers. Never had to show an ID. Week after week, month after month, I got this reminder of my privilege. And every week, it made me a little sadder. In the 7th month of the internship, when this had been going on for more than half a year, after one such episode, I got out my journal, got it out of my bag, and this is what I wrote. 80 miles north of El Paso on I-25, headed for Albuquerque. My bus pulls into a border patrol checkpoint. Weekly, I participate in this ritual. The green-clad agent steps aboard. If you are a U.S. citizen, state the city and state of your birth. If you are not, show your documentation. As far as I can see, the green agent and I are the only Anglos on this bus. Border Patrol makes her way down the aisle, frowning at papers of widely varying size and shape and color, sometimes also asking for separate ID, sometimes not. My head bows under the world's weights upon this spot, and this posture cues me to a whispered prayer. May there be an end to invidious distinctions, including those based on whether our mothers, when we first peeked out from them into the world, were north or south of a line a few politicians and generals drew more than 150 years ago. May I find ways to help bring justice from my unjust privilege. And blessed be all of us on this bus, including the Border Patrol agent, as we all struggle in our diverse ways to realize the fullness of our humanity. She gets finally to me on the backmost seat. This week, no one has been hauled off. I look up from the clasped hands in my lap, and for a flicker, our eyes meet, and my voice says, "Richmond, Virginia." This only is asked of me. No papers, no ID, pale skin and the right sort of accent clinch it if I will but utter the name of an approved holy city as the weekly sacrament of transition from El Paso husband to Albuquerque minister intern. I only have to say out loud my condemnation. Richmond is a city much farther away than Mexico, and memory recalls only a few passings through, and none of them recent. Of Richmond, I vaguely know a view of a skyline from the interstate and nothing more. Not that it matters. What I'm saying with those two words is, I am on your side, Agent Green Jumpsuit. I deny Yahweh's call for a preferential option for the poor. I deny Buddha's call to live compassion rather than fear. I deny my faith profession, the Unitarian commitment to the unity of us all, the Universalist commitment to universal community. From my lips, this two-word Peter's denial. Richmond, Virginia. Peter, having spoken, saw in a dizzy flash as I do. We who long to be merely good are revealed as rotten with complicity with the empire. And what could show more clearly than that? That the world's brokenness and mine are one. That's what I wrote. Looking back, I see that episode, those series of episodes, as important lessons in the education of Meredith. The weekly bus ride experience on the way to the internship was one of the important lessons of that internship. It showed me my unfair privilege over and over until I began to see it. Since then, things have gotten worse out west, and indeed all over. Arizona passed that bill, SB 1070, to target Hispanic immigrants. In July 2010, a number of Unitarian Universalists went to Phoenix to protest and engage in civil disobedience, and we will be there again, of course, in July 2012. I'm sorry I wasn't with them in 2010. My colleague, Reverend Susan Frederick Gray of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Phoenix, was among those who went to jail. As she related in a subsequent sermon, anyone who was in that jail with me on those days cannot deny the racism that underpins the rhetoric of fear around illegal immigration. I was surprised how openly the sheriff and his deputies tried to draw lines between the protesters along race. I am told the sheriff went into one of the cells with some of the protesters and asked the white protesters what they were doing and why they cared about these Hispanics. Didn't they see that they had more in common with him? Audrey Williams, an African-American Unitarian Universalist woman who needed a wheelchair while in jail, was put in solitary confinement for almost 20 hours. When she made repeated requests to be put with the other protesters, her friends, they told her, "Those white people don't care anything about you." They tried to bait us and divide us with race, and they spoke of their own work along racial lines. No matter what our politicians say, unequal treatment along lines of race was in effect during our time in jail. There is a fear and a hatred in the land. As people of faith, we are called to stand against it, to stand on the side of love, to know and to renounce our unjust privilege in the name of the much greater rewards of connection and solidarity and siblinghood. We have a long and deep theological grounding for this stand. It's a grounding that goes back to our roots in Judaism, from which Christianity sprang, from which Unitarian Universalism sprang. Exodus chapter 22, verse 21. "You shall not wrong or oppress a resident alien, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt." It's a point the Hebrew Scriptures repeated for emphasis. Exodus chapter 23, verse 9. "You shall not oppress a resident alien. You know the heart of an alien, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt." And repeated again, Leviticus chapter 19, verse 33. "When an alien resides with you in your land, you shall not oppress the alien. The alien who resides with you shall be to you as the citizen among you. You shall love the alien as yourself, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt." Many rabbis consider these among the most central texts in Judaism. And the theological grounding for the importance of this commandment is that the Jews are given to understand that the land is not theirs. The land is God's, as God tells them in Leviticus chapter 25. "The land shall not be sold in perpetuity, for the land is mine. With me, you are but aliens and tenants." That was their way of making the point that there is no true ownership of land. The land and the trees and the water under it and flowing over it belong to the earth, belong to all life, not to me or you. Laura Kim and I have deed and title to our house, and the law says that we own it. But I know that this is a legal fiction, and the squirrels and woodpeckers, the owls, armadillos, gopher tortoises, and occasional fox who pass through, they know it too. The spiritual truth is that all of the earth belongs to all of life. If the spiritual is whatever lifts us out of I, me, mine, lifts us out of protective fear into a spacious perception of the truth of abundance, lifts us out of any we, us, ours that does not include all sentient beings, then recognizing that all of the earth belongs to all of life is a spiritual act. And I believe that's what the Hebrew people were really saying in their own way The moral and emotional truth of "the land is mine, saith the Lord, with me you are but aliens and tenants," is that the earth is not truly ours. The American poet Emma Lazarus was Jewish, and she would have known well that teaching, "Do not oppress the stranger, for you too were strangers in the land of Egypt." In 1883, she wrote a sonnet called "The New Colossus," which was later inscribed on a bronze plaque at the base of the Statue of Liberty. "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." Now, certainly, no human being is refuse. And I understand Lady Liberty, as written by Emma Lazarus, to be saying, even if you have been treated as refuse, I welcome you. Even if your ethnos or class has been regarded as refuse by the prevailing prejudices of the powerful for centuries, I will take you in. Even if you've come to think of yourself as nothing but wretched refuse, I shine my light for you, shine the way to the door of freedom for you, and thereby announce to the world and to you that you are nothing of the kind. We do have in our hearts a yearning to be a hospitable and welcoming people. It's at the foundation of our most cherished emblem, the Statue of Liberty. And yet, our national heart is closing against itself. As the good Reverend Susan Frederick Gray said, we must see that it is unconscionable to fail to create legal avenues for people to come to this country to work and yet provide abundant jobs and opportunity to draw them here. It is unconscionable to allow companies to take vans to Mexico to recruit workers and now claim that those workers came here illegally and attempt to criminalize them. It is unconscionable to criminalize and put in jail young people who were brought here as children who had no criminal intent, to criminalize them for the decisions of their parents. It is unjust to have a situation where people have been working here for decades, owning homes, building lives, raising families, and all of a sudden try to deport them from their lives. It is unjust and sinful to have law enforcement going into predominantly Latino neighborhoods in the middle of the night knocking on doors, pulling people over for minor traffic violations like illegal lane changes and asking them for papers. Yet this is what is happening to neighborhoods, to citizens, to families, to children. And it is a fundamental violation of their human dignity and their civil rights. I would add that the devices that we use to limit voting are unconscionable. Yancy and I made a second trip to the registrar, and actually the matter was quickly and easily cleared up. They were very nice about it. And he did cast his first ballots on January 31st. He voted in Gainesville City Council race. There are much bigger injustices. Let us be hospitable. Let us be welcoming of the stranger. For the earth belongs to all of life, and we too are but tenants. You, each of you, has known what it was like to be in a situation where you didn't feel welcomed. You have been, in a manner of speaking, strangers in a metaphorical land of Egypt. You know the heart of a stranger. And so our neighborhoods are visited from people from afar. May you welcome them. And until our country becomes the place that lives up to its own principles, may you also welcome into your heart another visitor, righteous anger. Amen.